Okay, let you continue that you're involved in Inchon going back again and leading the night force in.
Yes. Well, we're moving ahead 5 years. I was then commanding a high-speed transport called Horace A. Bass. It was a destroyer escort hull that had been converted into a transport. Most of the Korean, most of the first year of the Korean War, we were landing reconnaissance forces on the coast of Korea. But when General MacArthur decided that we had to land behind the enemy lines, an amphibious force was put together at Pusan, and my ship was carrying the spearhead company of Marines into Incheon. And in addition to carrying the Marines in, we did we were a navigational leader of this force up the channel, a long, tortuous channel into the port of Incheon. And we went in a cover of darkness, and without incident, incidentally, the Koreans and Japan, no, excuse me, the Koreans had left the lights, navigational lights, on most of their buoys, and so it was not quite as difficult as it could otherwise have been. So the company of Marines that we had on board were among the first to land to occupy the principal island of Saishu Tau, which is covered the approach to Seoul, the capital of Korea. And the full day after arrival there, we were not only landing Marines, but guiding the other landing craft into the beach using our radio control methods.
And went without fire at first?
Yes, there was essentially no resistance as far as the ships were concerned. There were a few mines in the channel. We were fortunate in not having contacted any of those. The Marines had some resistance on shore, not severe, but they definitely had resistance, but quickly drove that back. As far as the ships were concerned, our enemy was the tides. We had to stay in deep water as the water receded, and as landing craft beached themselves to disgorge their cargo, then they had to get back into deep water before they were stranded. Otherwise, they'd wait for the next high tide, and they were vulnerable. Not only vulnerable, but it interfered with the unloading process. So that was the first day of the Incheon landings, and we stayed on until all the heavier ships had been unloaded, and finally went on and resumed our duties of demolishing railroads along the coast of Korea by sending landing parties in at night. We had marine reconnaissance teams and underwater demolition teams on board ship who would seek out the railroad tunnels and plant explosives and blow them up, and then we'd retreat and go to another site for the next night.
So you dropped them off and then picked them back up?
We did. They went in rubber boats. We launched them from rubber boats from anywhere from a half a mile to a mile offshore. We kept in radio contact with them while they were ashore. Their missions usually lasted between 1 and 2 hours, and then we guided them back to the ship. And meanwhile, we had selected a new location to for the following night, and we went up and down both coasts of Korea, pretty close to the Soviet border, and we had some sort of recognition from the commander of the Far East Air Forces, and having stopped the railroad traffic on those coastal lines that his heavy bombers had been unable to stop. But we were able to put demolition crews on the scene, and they could get into those tunnels, which bombs had didn't have smart bombs, and they couldn't find those tunnels as well as we could. That was my first post-war sea duty, was in that ship, and it was one of my most interesting assignments, not only the 8 months in Korea, but in the months building up to Korea, although it was not combat duty during the latter part of 1949 and into early 1950. My ship was the station ship in Hong Kong, meaning that we were permanently based there for over a period of months. We didn't move around very much during the winter of 1949-50, but the U.S. State Department, having evacuated all of its stations in China, we were then the communications base for the U.S. consul in Hong Kong, and he in turn represented the eyes and ears of the United States in that part of the world. Chiang Kai-shek had been driven back from central China, and the remnants of his armies were along the coast. The communists had occupied almost the entire mainland, and then eventually, toward the end of 1949, the nationalist forces moved over to Formosa, and then we were ordered, the Horace Bass was ordered up to Shanghai to evacuate the American nationals who remained there.
In China.
This little ship could carry only 100 people, but they sent two, the Navy Department sent two landing ships down from Tokyo, manned by Japanese crews. They were American ships, had been American ships, but they were manned by Japanese. They came down to provide extra carrying capacity for the American families. I was to be the American commander on the scene as the captain of this Horace A. Bass, and I met these Japanese ships in the shallow estuary of the Yangtze River, and waiting for State Department to clear the arrangements for us to go up the river to Shanghai and bring out the Americans. And for a month, we were wallowing in the shallow China Sea, and had a rather boring time. The crew were fishing to supplement our supplies, our food, and I had a hard time with the Japanese commanders of those ships, having them anchor in a safe way. And in spite of various cautions, they did, in fact, both lose an anchor, and finally one of them lost his second anchor, and then we were really in serious trouble. Mm. We had to transfer an anchor from my ship to their LST, and a 2,000-pound anchor to be moved over that way without any boat that could carry it took a little bit of planning. So,
told him if he lost that one, he had to go home.
Well, would have. But we figured a way to drop the anchor to the bottom of the sea and buoy it, and then rig a line so that they could connect up to it and take it in and salvage the expedition.
Was there a lot of
yes?
tension there and trying to figure out what was going on and when things were going to happen? And
now, I wouldn't say there was tension. I didn't feel tension at any rate, and I wasn't the kind of guy who would be tense under those circumstances, but I found it challenging, and I had learned through these earlier years of my Navy upbringing enough to plan for all the exigencies, so that if you lose an anchor, you've got a backup plan to take care of it, and that's what we did. It was also during that period that my ship was ordered to Bangkok, Siam. No ship Thailand now. No American ship had been in Thailand since before the war, and the channel into Bangkok was silted in. So the American fleet commander was to fly into Bangkok to arrange for helping them dredge the channel and open it to commerce. He needed a flagship. He couldn't get any other ship in there. My ship had shallow enough draft to cross the bar at high tide, and we did in fact go into Bangkok and established ourselves as a flagship of the 7th Fleet, and the Admiral met with the Premier of Thailand on board the ship and with the commander of the Thai Navy. And for our young officers and crew, this was an exciting time to see a different part of the world and a different level of diplomacy, too.
What time frame was this that you were in Thailand?
What time frame?
Yeah.
Yes, that was in January of 1950, which puts it 5 months before the Korean War started. It was immediately after mainland China fell to the communists, and it was 6 months or 5 months before the communists invaded from north to South Korea. So those were busy times, although it wasn't always apparent to others.
Yeah, it was obviously an important political mission, yes. Even though you might not have known it at the time.
Yeah.
Let me just stop here. I think that's it.